You're listening to Heritage Radio Network.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Potluck Food Talks. I'm here with Phil San, who just returned from the islands from the Far East.
The Misty Islands. The promised land.
Exactly. So how was it? How long were the... You went to Japan like for 3 weeks, 2 weeks?
Not quite, just for 10 days. But okay. It was a really, really good amount of time, actually. For people who don't know, I used to live in Japan before. I used to live in Tokyo in 2014 for almost a year, working in a special little restaurant called Ryugin, just a casual little three Michelin star place. Back then in Roppongi, now it moved. So it's been 12 years since I've been to Japan. And I've actually, for a third of my career, have cooked Japanese food, which is pretty crazy to think about. So I'm very into it. And I was very excited to go back and wanted this trip to be more of a spread of like different experiences. And I was especially interested in having like really real experiences. I didn't just want to go to a hotel and go to this famous place and that famous place. I wanted to have like real like Japanese life, you know. I'm super happy of how that went. It was really, really nice.
What was the itinerary? Which cities did you visit?
So we arrived in Tokyo and we stayed in Tokyo for 2 days and then took a Shinkansen to Kyoto and stayed most of the time in Kyoto.
That's what I thought. You were quite a few days in Kyoto, right?
Yeah, that was my focus because Tokyo, I love Tokyo. I mean, I could live in Tokyo very easily. I love it there. It's super nice. There's so much going on, but there's like such a cool vibe. But I'd never been to Kyoto, and I know that Kyoto is a lot more sort of old school, more vintagey, more traditional in a way. And I really wanted to spend as much time there as possible. And then we did 2 days in Osaka, but also just because our flight was from Osaka back to Europe. And
highlights, food highlights, city by city. Let's start with Tokyo.
Oh man, there were a lot, honestly. There really were a lot. So I didn't just want to go to like the Michelin star high-end places, you know. Actually, I wanted to do that as little as possible. There were a couple that I went that were really nice. Also, I'm really happy I went. They were exceptional. But more than anything, I wanted to go to this kind of like small hole-in-the-wall places that just do exceptionally good food. I went to a really nice soba place near Kapabashi, which was, I think soba is really, really underrated outside of Japan.
Absolutely.
There's ramen places and stuff, you know, and like everybody likes ramen. Then like there's a few like well-known udon places, as in like Paris, for example, or Koya in London, you know, they've been doing udon for ages. But soba and like good soba is outside of Japan. I've never seen that.
Yeah, I guess I agree. I also think it's more difficult to communicate to the wider audience. It's also like more subtle, more Japanese, like more elegant, while ramen is more Chinese. It's like a in-your-face pork broth, like super strong, you know, like that's easier for everybody to understand and like, while this is something you have to get into it.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. But if you like really experience it, it's amazing. Yeah, also the combination of like, you know, soba, like handmade noodles, buckwheat noodles with the condiments, and then like really good seasonal tempura. Again, you know, and just like this like tiny place, super beautiful. And they had tempura of a spring green called Angelica. Do you notice this herb?
No.
Angelica?
No idea.
So it's almost like a celery plant. It's like quite a big, like wild plant. It looks like a big bush, almost like a fennel. And in springtime, the like bulbs, they're very tender and they get used for miso soup and for tempura more than anything. They have a very, very particular flavor, a slight bitterness. They're very healthy for you. Again, they have like a really, you know, like how, for example, lovage has like a very, very unique aroma. It's kind of the same with that. It's a little bit lovagey, but a little bit more citric, I would say. Super nice, like a tempura of that, super, super tasty.
Ah, super interesting. Yeah, it really does like fennel flowers.
Yeah, totally. And this is something that I hadn't seen in a really long time since actually I worked in London in this Japanese restaurant Koya, where we would go foraging a lot. That was one of the restaurants, one of the only restaurants when Junya Yamasaki was there, who now has an amazing restaurant in LA called Yes with double S. The restaurant where I've seen Japanese philosophy best lived out in a country that's not Japan, which is seasonality, local ingredients cooked in a Japanese way. And we would gather Angelica there. I know Noma used to use it also. And yeah, so that was really, really good. And then Kyoto was just like chock full of highlights. I went to this temple lunch that you recommended.
Did you like it?
It was fantastic. It was one of the best meals we had. Yeah. It was such a good recommendation.
Yeah, also like spending the whole morning there, right? Like walking in the forest and finishing in the temple. Yeah, for me, it was also one of the highlights for sure.
Yeah, 100%. My mom was blown away. Like this, it was exactly like what she wanted to do.
I'm so happy. I'm so happy it worked out. Nice.
Yeah, I mean, it was very busy because it's like Sakura season. So the garden and the temple garden was like very full of people, but we went quite early. Our lunch was at 11:30.
That's just very similar to what we did. It's like a great plan to do it like that. Yeah.
And you know, I was really curious to see what it was going to be like, because back when I lived in Tokyo, I went to this like very fine dining kaiseki style dinner, which was very similar. It was like vegetarian temple food, and it was a super beautiful restaurant in Ginza, like hidden away. You would get your own private tatami room, etc. While the food was very interesting, they had a lot of similar things that we ate there. It was a little bit underwhelming. And this time, going to Tenryu Temple, the food was so nice. There were so many highlights inside of that meal. They had a nasu dengaku, which is a miso glazed aubergine, which there was one of the... I've eaten it many times. And in many different countries also, because people like to remake this dish. And there it was the best like miso aubergine that I've ever had. It was so juicy, and the meat of the aubergine was flaky, almost like a codfish. I was like, what the fuck? This is so, so good. They had an amazing sesame tofu, gomadare tofu, which was incredible. They had... This bamboo leaf that was filled with a mochi.
That was one of the highlights for me. Like, that was like wrapped in kind of like an origami kind of thing that you had to open. Like, I even thought that it was just decoration, and then suddenly not. There was like the most amazing mochi I've ever had inside of it. I don't remember what the filling was.
So for us, it was like a sweet yuzu kind of filling.
Yeah. Yeah, correct. And, yeah.
Oh, it was so nice. Like, I was like, what the fuck? Like, the texture of the mochi, the flavor so nice. Of the yuzu, just fucking perfect. And it was super friendly. And, like, the best thing also was that you can book three types of packages depending how many dishes you get. And I just booked the biggest one with the most dishes, right? Because
I did the same. Yeah, and it was not expensive at all. Yeah.
No, I think the big package was like 50 euros per person or something like that.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah,
Shigetsu is the name of the restaurant in the temple. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. But yeah, I'm not a peasant. I'm not a schmuck. I'm not gonna book the basic package, right? And so it was really cool to go in, and like I said, the temple was busy as fuck, and we were the only people that got a private room. Everybody else had to sit in the communal rooms.
Yeah. Oh, nice.
Which was very nice. Yeah, that was a definite highlight. Another thing that was like a massive highlight was yakitori. I also think that yakitori is super underrated outside of Japan.
Where did you have yakitori?
I went to three places. Most importantly, I went to Torishosai, which is, I think they have a Michelin star. Kevin recommended it to me and booked a table for me. They used to go all the time. Yeah, amazing. It was just like... It's one counter. I think it's like 10 people eat at the same time. Everybody, like, it's just one seat. Well, one seating at a time, right? And they do like two or three seatings in the evening. You get like, I don't know, like 14 courses or something. Super good. super, super good. One of the best sukune skewers I've ever had.
What is sukune?
It's the meatball, you know, the meatball okay. skewer. Yeah.
Yeah, I also went to a super nice yakitori place. I don't remember the name. It was in Kyoto. And yeah, for me, it was incredible. Like, it's so nice. Like, they would, such a way of understanding the bird, such an experience, because you get like this little cuts that every bird has just a little piece and they make a skewer with 10 of those or this kind of thing. That is just incredible.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Had some really good sushi also. Really, really good sushi. And also not just like the fancy. We went to Sushi Saeki, which is like Kappo style, super high-end. For people who don't know, Kappo style is a very like high-end Japanese concept where you have basically a counter, and then behind that counter are the chefs with like big chopping board surfaces and stuff. And they prepare the food in front of you, carting, plating, cooking, and then they just like reach over and put the plate down in front of you. And that was a whole experience. That was amazing. We went to like just like small hole-in-the-wall sushi places in Tokyo and in Osaka, which again were also super good. And like a really good kaiten sushi place, which is the conveyor belt sushi. And in all of these places, you have these highlights. Like for example, in the kaiten sushi place, they were selling a special, which was maguro tuna marinated in soy with yuzu on top, like fresh yuzu skin. And man, it's like you get this like piece of lean tuna marinated in like a nice soy sauce with like yuzu on top. It's just fucking delicious. You could eat 10 of those, you know?
Yeah, I remember going to Tsukiji Market, and there was like this famous guy that is the tuna king. I had just, yeah, like I think it's the best tuna I've ever had. Like, it's super touristy. You're not allowed to create content to upload it without permission. So they're super restrictive with that. And the guy looks like this bigger than life celebrity tuna lover. Apparently every year in the tuna auction, he has to buy the first one. It doesn't matter how much he pays. He always gets the first one when tuna season starts. And it's like his thing. And it's like his marketing tactic, you know? Like every year he does the same and he's on everywhere in the news. He has like 10 restaurants. All of this sounds like not good for a place to go and visit, but it was incredible. The tuna was just incredible.
Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing. Like, I mean, the like quality of stuff that you get, like even just the markets, the produce quality is just amazing. Like the tuna also, like in Kyoto, I don't know if it's like a Kyoto specialty, but I've never had it before. And I had it a few times in Kyoto. It was this like roll, like of, it was either, we had it as gunkans, which is how to describe a gunkan for people who don't know. It's basically like a little boat of like nori and sushi rice. You have the topping on top instead of like a maki where the nori is on the outside as a roll. But the filling was the same, which was like the tuna meat from the ribs. Like when you filleted the tuna, the meat that you scrape off the ribs, and then that's kind of like chopped up with pieces of pickled daikon radish. And so you have like a tuna and pickled radish roll, and you have this like crunchy sour radish and the fatty tuna. And it was like, man, fucking hell. And we had that at like at Sushi Saeki, which was like super high end, and even just like the like small, like dirty sushi places where people smoke on the tables. And
I saw a place in Tokyo like that. I couldn't get in because it was already completely booked and I was alone. But I saw the pictures and I walked by and I saw inside, and these were like just this little tables, you know, like plastic tables, nothing fancy. You know, it was only working people, and the tables were full of these super long ribs of tuna. And you would spoon out the meat, and that's what you do there, you know. And every table had this whole rib cage, you know. It was incredible.
Damn, that's so nice. I've never been to a place like that. That's really cool. Yeah, what else was good? I had one of the best ramen that I've ever had in my life. And like you were talking about ramen earlier, you know, these like pork broths that are very creamy and very rich. They're very popular, you know, because they're very tasty. And also... And I had one that was similar to that. I had a pork ramen. I had a chicken ramen that was made like a tonkatsu. So chicken broth cooked for so long, so it like emulsifies all the fats and it gets really thick. And that was really cool because it tasted like, my mom was eating it. She was like, you know what this tastes like? This tastes like carbonara. And she was right, because it was like fatty, salty. There was like onions on top of it. And you put and like black pepper. And it really tasted like carbonara in a really nice way. But I went to one because I really wanted to go to a ramen place that was broth focused, because I love those sorts of places that don't do the creamy broths, but like the really intense consommé ones. I kept walking past this one place and there was always a huge queue outside. And so I was like, all right, this has to be good. And I get into the queue at like, you know, just before 12 o'clock. So it's still early. And the waitress comes outside and she comes to me and she's like, do you have a ticket? And I'm like, what ticket? She's like, oh, I'm sorry. Like, if you don't have a ticket, you can't queue. On all the tickets for today, they have already been handed out. So the people who are queuing all had a ticket. Then I went home and I researched, and it turns out that to go to this ramen place, you need to get there at 10 o'clock in the morning. That's when they open the door and they start handing out the tickets. So you get a ticket for a time slot and you have 20 minutes to eat, basically. And it's common courtesy that after you finish your food, you don't wait, you get up and you leave. You pay and you leave straight away. And so the next day I did that, went there at 10 o'clock, got a ticket for like 12 o'clock and got in. And even though you have a ticket, you still have to queue because they only have so busy, man. I don't know how many like bowls of noodles they have to. There's like four guys in the kitchen. They do two types of ramen and like three side dishes and that's it. And as soon as I got into that restaurant, this intense smell of very high quality dashi hits me. The whole place was just filled with the aroma of really well-made dashi. And I hadn't smelled that in a really, really long time. I think the last time I smelled that was, you know, back in Japan. Because there's a huge difference between box standard dashi that people use for cooking and that like, you know, like places make, you know, just like for cooking, and the sort of ichiban dashi. Ichiban dashi means like the first infusion of the dashi. And usually ichiban dashi is used for drinking and for soup dishes, like very where it's focused on the dashi. And then you have the second flush of the dashi, which is then used for cooking and stuff like that. I was standing there in this restaurant and I was really reminiscing about the smell because for me, it is the quintessence of Japanese cooking as I have experienced it and the quintessence of umami. Just full on umami, you know, because the seasoning is very low. It's like very low salt, very low sugar, very low fat, but it's just like full on umami from the kombu, the kelp, and the katsuobushi and the soy sauce. These guys also, they're very interesting. They specialized in two types of soy sauce. You could take the dashi, the ramen with white soy sauce, and you could take the ramen with black soy sauce.
Where was this?
In Kyoto.
Kyoto. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's called Ramen Inoichi.
Inoichi, okay.
Can very highly recommend it. So we get in, we order one of each ramen. I really wanted to have the one with the white soy sauce because that sounded really interesting. Then they also did shumai dumplings, which I thought was really funny. They did cold tofu with walnuts and Japanese parsley. And what else? I don't really remember what else. But the dashi, man, like once the ramen comes and you drink the soup, it's just like, we talked about this here on the podcast before, but it's just like, it's so deep and it's so well-rounded. It's so well-cooked. It's so saturated with flavor. It was amazing. And it really reminded me of what I really, really love about Japanese food.
Did you do only Tokyo and Kyoto?
We went to Osaka for 2 days also, but it was kind of just for transit. I've not really been to Osaka very much. I'm sure it's very, very cool. I heard very good things about it. For the area that we were in, it was very, very busy. It was very intense.
Completely different from the rest of Japan, isn't it? Like the rest of Japan, for example, I have the feeling that Osaka is way more liberal. For example, there are things that you can't do in Japan, like smoking in the streets, or in Osaka, I would see people smoking in the streets. You would see graffitis. You would see things that you probably get beheaded if you do it in Tokyo or Kyoto.
Yeah, you could really tell. Like, and I mean, Osaka, people in Osaka, they're known for being like more open, more friendly in a way. While in Tokyo, you know, everybody's very straight, very kind of like shy to themselves, very polite. In Kyoto, everybody was really, really laid back and friendly. And Osaka, people are like much more straightforward, open, you know. Coming from Kyoto, where everything was very vintagey. You felt almost like you were time traveling a little bit. And as you know, you walk past the temples. I used to jet lag to my advantage and went jogging in the morning to like pass the time. So I would always like wake up at like 4:30 in the morning and just go for a run. And it's amazing what you find, you know? So you would just like run through a neighborhood and you come across beautiful cemeteries, beautiful temple structures with like massive gardens and completely empty, of course, because nobody's awake at the time. Mm-hmm. You know, no, not too many tall buildings, like everything just really laid back and cool. I really, really enjoyed it. It was amazing. A completely different Japanese experience. And I can recommend this to anybody, you know, like do the big city, do Tokyo, go to Shibuya, go to Ginza, go into like the fancy restaurants there. But then, you know, like also the places that I booked to stay, I didn't book any hotels. I booked sort of like small ryokans.
What's a ryokan?
A ryokan is like an inn, you know?
Okay.
Like, and often these were just like old houses that somebody would live in. We stayed in this one place. I mean, it's like, it's very brutally minimalistic. You have a room with a mat that you sleep on the floor. And that's it. But it has so much character. And it's like, this is a house that somebody lives in, you know, it's a real Japanese house with a Japanese garden and a Japanese kitchen and an engawa that goes around the house that you can access the garden from like different sides. And then you go outside, you know, and you walk through the neighborhood. You see the cafes, you see the restaurants. It's only full of locals. You get a completely different experience of the country because you're actually living like the real everyday life rather than the tourist side of it.
Yeah, and Osaka also, the food scene, I was really impressed with it. Also very different. I think very like non-traditional, what I saw, like very... They define it themselves as fusion. I heard the word more than once. Like, yeah, we do fusion Japanese. Basically, is that they do whatever they want. Basically,
yeah, that is basically what that word means. You know, yeah, yeah. I've not, like I said, I've only been in Osaka like 2 days barely. But yeah, I heard that the food scene is really, really fun. I went to one place. I had the best soba of the trip in Osaka. And I'm going to look up the name of the place. I took a photo because it was so much fun. It's exactly the sort of place that I like going and that I love about Japan. It's called Te Uchi Soba Shuhari. And it's basically like a barn. So it's like a long building. It looks like almost like... Yeah.
Beautiful.
And you go in, it's just like a row of tables, there's artwork hanging on the walls, there's jazz playing, and it's no bullshit, it's not fancy. Amazing soba, like a little noodle room where they make the noodles. They make amazing cold soba, they make amazing tempura, they make amazing duck soup, you know, soba in duck broth with slices of duck on top. And like it's filled with people that are just coming in for a quick bite. And it's just perfect. It's just fucking perfect. There's sake, there's beer, everybody's laid back, there's cool music playing. Absolutely amazing. And I wish that these sorts of places would exist outside of Japan, honestly.
Absolutely, yeah.
Also tempura. I don't know, did you go to a cool tempura place when you were in...
No, not to a tempura omakase. I had a few very, very good tempuras. And yeah, I wasn't generally impressed with the frying technique. I think the Japanese, they don't understand frying not only as a dry cooking technique, but also as a steaming technique.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's exactly my experience also. Back when I had my first experience with that, it really changed the way that I think about it, because you think it's like fried and then it's like crispy and blah, but you have to kind of forget the oil part of it. It's really encoding something in a layer. And then it's cooking in its own juices inside of that layer. And the layer being like very thin, usually very thin, very light. I had one thing that like blew me away, because I, on the very, very last day, actually for lunch, before we went to the airport, our flight was at 10 o'clock at night. I was like, okay, let's do one more like high-end tempura place. And it was really cool because my mom, it was her first time, and she had exactly the same experience that I had back then when my old head chef, Seiji Yamamoto, took me to a tempura place. Because she was like, yeah, I like tempura, but like, how good can it be? Even I was like surprised again, because, for example, a piece of eggplant. And I'm not a big fan of eggplant, honestly. Like, there's ways of doing eggplant that, like, you know, it's okay. But I would rarely like pick it up myself in the supermarket. And this guy literally takes a piece of eggplant, flours it, dips it, fries it, rests it, cuts it, and just puts it in front of you. And the amount of juice and tenderness and flavor inside of this aubergine is absolutely amazing. It's also one of the things that also I think makes a big impact is the freshness and the immediacy of, like, it's not something that's cooked and it comes to the pass, you put it on the plate, you wait for one of your stupid fucking waiters to come and pick it up until they find the table, put it down. Sorry to the front of house, our listeners. but, you know, like the chef, and with yakitori also, they cook it until they find that it's perfect and they put it in front of you. And if you go to a yakitori place like that, you go to a tempura place like that, or a sushi place for that matter, you're ever in that situation, do the chef the courtesy and eat the thing straight away. It's not meant to sit there in front of you while you talk to your neighbor about your ski holiday in Aspen. It's for you to eat it when the chef deems it to be at its best. And when you do that, you realize that things have a very, very short window of being absolutely exceptional. Like, things can be good in like a larger window, depending what we talk about. But from sushi, as soon as he makes the nigiri, he puts it down, sushi goes down, especially when you're at a really good sushi place, because they don't press the rice into a block. I've had this experience at Sushi Saeki. He put a nigiri down in front of me, and I would claim that a sushi chef tries to get the rice just to the right consistency that it holds, but not anymore, so that the rice is very loose, right? And very, very tender in a way. And I picked it up, and he could see that I was struggling a little bit because one part wasn't quite there. And he apologized to me. He was like, oh, I'm sorry. And the next, like, nigiris that he made, every time that I picked it up, I could see him kind of, like, looking over whether it would happen again. So they really care about this. And, like, as soon as he puts it down in front of you, the momentum goes down. We've talked about the momentum before on the podcast.
Yeah, a couple of times.
Same with yakitori. Puts it in front of you. It's perfect. It's full of juice. It's full of life. The longer you talk about your fucking, you know, whatever, your fat suction operation in Cancun, the less delicious your skewer is going to be.
Yeah, going back to skewers and fries, fried stuff, I also mentioned this before. One of my favorite places was a kushikatsu place in Osaka called Kushiage 010. Yeah. And I remember that there was a frying master, which was like an old chef, and the younger chef who was, I don't know, like his protege, his apprentice, whatever. And they would really like have timers for the frying. So, and they were really looking into the stuff. And yeah, you would, whatever it was, it could be a prawn, it could be a piece of pork, it could be a vegetable, whatever it was, if you bite it and you looked on the inside, it was perfectly medium cooked the way it should be, like in all of the cases, you know, like and very different products, you know, like vegetables or seafood or meats. That was pretty cool. Yeah,
it's amazing. It's really crazy, and it's like it takes so much skill and so much knowledge, so much of this like thing that, you know, Fergus Henderson calls the Jedi sense, you know, of like knowing what's happening without seeing inside of the product. And I think that's really, really amazing. If you've not been to Japan and you've been thinking about going, but you have this hesitation, just go. Like, just book a flight and go. You know, it's if you're in any way interested in cooking and in food, it is by far one of the reference, you know, places in the world. And to me, back then, it was life changing. You know, this time around, it was incredibly inspirational again. And I've actually decided that I'm going to try to go, like, if not, I'm actually kind of thinking of going once a year now.
I thought the same last time I was. Right now is a good moment. Like, the yen is lower than dollar and euro, and for that reason, it's cheaper than it used to be. So everybody has this idea that Japan is very expensive, and today it's not at all.
Like, not at all.
Yeah. And even if you're smart and choose like the right season, you can find very affordable flights as well.
Oh yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, I flew in the middle of Sakura season, and it was very expensive. And like, of course, the flights are going to be expensive, but like, if you don't need to go to Michelin star restaurants in Japan to have exceptionally good food, really, really outstanding good food. You can eat on an average of 30 quid per person and eat plenty of food. I was once again really surprised how affordable the food is there. And just like in general, like coffees and stuff like that, you know, super, super affordable, like nothing at all. Transport's also super fine. So if you plan a little bit smart, it's totally doable. Just don't be this person that like this person that I met on the bus where she's like, oh yeah, oh, you're from Germany. I'm from Germany too. Yeah, I'm here with my friends. Yeah, we thought it was going to be really expensive, but we just go eat at 7-Eleven every day. Don't be that person. Don't not go to 7-Eleven because konbini food is amazing, right? But don't be a fucking trash panda and just live at the konbini.
That's it for this week's episode of Potluck Food Talks. If you like what we're doing, make sure to subscribe to the podcast so you never miss an episode. You can also find us on Instagram and TikTok as Potluck Food Talks. The show airs every Monday.